On a Saturday afternoon, kids and their grown-ups come streaming out of the movie theater on the plaza after seeing Pixar's latest animated adventure, Inside Out. The movie doesn't take you to a faraway land. Instead, it takes you inside a child's mind by personifying the emotions in there, showing how core memories and personality traits are made. It's pretty heavy, complex stuff, and we wondered whether kids really got it. That's why we sent Hannah Copeland to go ask them.
It's cool to see what's in people's minds.
A girl whose emotions were messed up?
It was about what was in this 12-year-old girl's mind and how she, overcame fears in her life.
Who was the funniest character?
Bing Bong. When he let Joy put the core memories in his bag and took out a few other things than marbles.
Who's your favorite character?
Anger.
Why?
Because he's tough. And he always has fire.
Was there a moral to the story?
Yes.
What was it?
I don't know.
It's okay to be sad.
We all go through our sad times and what have you, but you eventually fight through it and get eventually to back to your happy place again.
Did you learn anything from it?
Yes.
Yeah, like what?
That happiness can't last your whole life.
Oh.
That's so sad. Is that what you learned?
Yes.
Oh.
You can't be happy your whole life.
I know. You can be happy. You can also be.
Well, not your whole life.
Okay. I didn't realize that's what you got from it.
We might be surprised by what goes on in kids' minds, but in this case, that kid is totally right. The message of that movie was pretty much that it's dangerous to expect yourself or anyone else to be happy all the time. I'm Gina Kaufman. Today's Central Standard is a Screen Time episode dedicated to the movie Inside Out. We'll hear from a mom whose kids really connected with the film, as well as a scholar of Greek mythology and a movie critic. We'd love to hear your reviews, too. You can call 816-235-2888 to weigh in on Inside Out anytime throughout the hour. Nichelle Nickel, area mom, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi.
And Charles Kovich, professor of English at Rockhurst University, specializing in Greek mythology and screenwriting. Thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
Russ Simmons, our movie critic. It's great to see you.
And you too. Good morning.
Well, Russ, kick us off by setting up the drama of Inside Out. But first, a word of caution to those listeners who haven't seen it yet. We won't throw spoilers around just for kicks, but plot points will inevitably surface. So if you're worried about that, the podcast version of the show might be the right choice for you. Okay, Russ, over to you. The plot, the cast of characters, their main dilemma.
Well, basically, it's a story about a young girl and her parents who move from Minnesota to the West Coast for a job for the father, and it is a traumatic experience for the girl. She's uprooted. She's lost her friends and her activities that she enjoyed in the Midwest, and it's a very difficult adjustment for her. And so what we see in the movie are these characters personified, her emotions personified in her brain as we see this conflict unfold and how she copes with it. And frankly, I think it's brilliant. As a matter of fact, after I saw the film, I immediately tweeted out, this film deserves a Best Screenplay Academy Award nomination.
Period. Not just kids' movies.
No, of any film. And it, matter of fact, I got a lot of feedback on that, and people seem to agree.
Well, let's explore a little more about what we mean when we say that we see the emotions personified. Let's get a taste of how they interact and ultimately dictate how Riley's going to respond to the world around her. We have a clip from a scene when Riley is just a toddler being fed by her dad. All the emotions take turns jumping in as needed.
All right, open.
This looks new.
Think it's safe?
What is it?
Okay, caution. There is a dangerous smell, people. Hold on, what is that?
This is disgust. She basically keeps Riley from being poisoned, physically and socially.
That is not brightly colored or shaped like a dinosaur. Hold on, guys. It's broccoli! Yuck! Well, I just saved our lives. Ooh. Yeah, you're welcome.
Riley, if you don't eat your dinner, you're not gonna get any dessert.
Wait, did he just say we couldn't have dessert?
That's anger. He cares very deeply about things being fair.
So that's how you want to play it, old man? No dessert? Oh, sure. We'll eat our dinner right after you eat this.
So anger kicks in, sets off a tantrum. There are more emotions than that. We just met anger and disgust. There's also fear, sadness, and joy. Sadness and joy are really the main characters in a way. But Russ, can you explain what's happening there visually? Like, what are they doing? Where are they? How are they manning this ship, as it were?
It's sort of like they're on the deck of the Starship Enterprise, and they're looking out the window, which are Riley's eyes as she sees the world, and also the other parts of the brain. And it's almost like it's Disneyland, her brain. And
I wouldn't be surprised if we started seeing, like, adventure lands based off of these parts of the brain.
I think it's inevitable. The characters themselves, I think they did a really nice job of personifying these emotions. Joy, always a smile on her face, a happy, bright colors, and sadness is blue, sadness is short, sadness is slow moving.
As a shortish person, I take issue here, but go on.
And you also have Fear, who's hyper and constantly nervous and tall and skinny and hyper, as I say. And then you have Anger, who's red and his hair is almost like a flame. So, I think the, it's simplification, but boy, it's clarification too.
Well, one more just thing that we need to clarify as far as the setup goes, I think. There's some serious infrastructure in Riley's mind, so let's get our listeners oriented to that. We've got headquarters, personality islands, imagination land, long-term memory, the subconscious, and a train of thought traveling between them all. Anything you think people really need to understand about these places before we dive in?
You know, I thought they did a terrific job of explaining it as it went along, there are these balls that are these, some of them are core memories and some of them are short-term memories. And they basically show how these are stored and when we use them, when we don't use them, and when it's okay to get rid of them.
And how we change them with our emotions.
Exactly.
Well, overall, the Russ Simmons review of Inside Out sounds just incredibly positive. Charles Kovich, mythology scholar, we invited you on the show because it occurred to us that even though it might feel new to see characters representing different emotions inside someone's mind, this drama has been playing out externally in the form of Greek gods and goddesses for a long time. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yes, that's certainly true. The Greeks, the classical Greeks, were intellectually curious people. They wondered about the world about them, and they knew they were part of their world. So they wondered about themselves, and they looked deep into their own selves to see their emotions. They started the study of psychology, psyche, logos, study of the soul. You can see that in their Greek myths, in Greek drama especially. And they were very powerful because they were saying, these aren't just abstract characters. This is us. We all have these emotions. One thing I liked about the movie is that it really drew you into that to see that we were sharing these common human emotions during that. And they named their emotions. The Greeks were anthropomorphic, also anthropopathic.
What's that?
That means that their gods not only look like us, which is the morphic part, but pathic. We got a word pathetic eventually in another meeting from that. But they shared emotions, just like the Judeo-Christian god shares emotions. God gets angry, et cetera, in the Hebrew scriptures, et cetera. And so that's what anthropopathic means, that we can relate to these gods because we all share the same emotions. But they had Ania, the god of sorrow, Euphrosyne, the god of joy. They had Lyssa, the god of anger or rage. They had all of these things. Phobos, the god of fear. We even have our modern word phobia from it.
But what does Phobos have in common with the fear character in Inside Out? Anything worth noting?
Well, that you might be fearful of a lot of things. He seems
an
to be
an important character, then.
Exactly, totally phobic. Everything strikes fear in him. And again, the Greeks were wonderful at setting the stage for our whole intellectual Western history of thought because they made us think about these things. And we see how they play out in the actual myths in the Greek drama, that these are real people who have these real emotions, and there's a sense that we have to connect with them, otherwise we will never understand ourselves.
It does seem like, both in Greek mythology and in Inside Out, human beings are not acting entirely on their own volition, whether it's emotions steering them from within or gods and goddesses kind of playing games with them from the outside.
Oh, that's true. The Greeks understood that very, very well. They had people like Apollo, the god of light and reason and music, but people like Dionysus, the god of ecstasy. And they knew that sometimes you could go into, he's also the god of wine, which is interesting. Sometimes you could be ecstatic. And there's a wonderful Greek drama, the Bacchae, about a young man, Pentheus, who wants to be totally reasonable. It reminds me of Mr. Spock on Star Trek, all reason. Well, in the end, of course, the god destroys him because that deep emotional ecstasy overtakes him and literally tears him apart by the end.
Whoa.
It's a lesson from the Greeks. I mean, he is, by the way, literally dismembered by the end of the play.
Dismembered as a result of trying to be entirely rational?
Yes. And the god Dionysus takes control of him and says, no, you will come over to my side. And he is literally torn apart by the followers of Dionysus. That's what the Greeks were trying to tell us. We do have these emotions, and we had better understand them, or we may be, at least metaphorically, torn apart.
What do you think about the way that you create sort of visual descriptions of these characters? I mean, both in this movie and in Greek mythology. I mean, the god of rage you were describing, Lyssa, is that right?
Right.
She is portrayed as having, you know, short, dark, curly hair, a short skirt, and a hat that's like a dog head.
Yes, you have to see these people as real. I mean, it's one of the reasons we love movies. They make things visual and real for us. And this movie is particularly good, I think, I agree, because that's how we relate to things. We relate to people like ourselves. And so, again, the great thing about the Greeks, though, is that...
So that's why we would make an emotion into a character
exactly,
in the first place.
Exactly. Many of the other myths and other ancient religions, you know, they had gods with heads of owls and heads of a jackal and all of these things. The Greeks were amazing in this way. They saw that, no, these emotions, these deep, deep rooted things were us. They're deep in us. So they made them into real human beings that looked like us and unfortunately acted like us some of the times too, in the good and in the bad.
So headquarters in Inside Out, that's like our sort of executive functioning place where we make decisions and all the emotions are gathered around there when all is working correctly. Would that be like Mount Olympus?
Well, Mount Olympus was the home of the gods. I'm not sure that they controlled everything from there. They wanted to control things, but even they saw they could not control everything. There were things that the king of the gods, Zeus, could not control. The fates would decide things that even he could not control. And they had trouble with their emotions. I mean, that's what makes them so wonderful and so much fun. We have children's books on classical mythology. They are just fun. Sometimes they let loose and they remind you of a little child going into a rage or sorrow or fear. And that's one reason I think they are so very popular for all ages. And I like this movie because I saw both children and adults relating to this because it is, as the classical Greeks said, our emotions. This is us.
Do you think that people just have a basic need to see their internal dramas play out externally in kind of a literal way? I mean, this sounds, when we think about it in terms of having this long history, like it's just a timeless way, the kind of drama that people create.
As human beings, we're very visual creatures, and that gives us a kind of pointedness. It gives us a kind of image. I mean, the imagination, the root word is image there, imago, image. And that's what we need to see, and it helps us understand ourselves. I think sometimes if we try to do these things on an intellectually abstract level, it just fades away. But if you see a real human person, a real color, something like that you can associate, it makes it more real to us and more understandable in the end.
Well, more into Greek mythology later, but what's your capsule review of Inside Out?
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was a wonderful movie. It's one of maybe the best animated movie I've ever seen. I loved it just because of the quality of the movie, but also for its message. And by the way, the people who did the voices were just great. Bing Bong had this great voice. I loved it all through the imaginary character.
Yeah, explain who Bing Bong is because we haven't talked about him yet.
He is the imaginary character that Riley had when she was a very little girl. And now that she's gotten older, she's 11 when the movie starts, has faded away. And as we go into her mind, her consciousness, he reappears. The movie is really a kind of journey, quest motif to get back to headquarters. And he reappears. And it turns out that imaginary character is the inspiration to get joy, actually, back into Riley's mind so that sadness doesn't take over forever.
More on all of this. But Nichelle Nickel, you saw the movie with your two kids. Is that right?
Yeah, I have a 5-year-old daughter and a 4-year-old son. And we went and saw it recently, and it was really great.
Tell us that story. Well, first of all, tell me about your kids.
They're, you know, pretty normal kids. We've had a lot go on in the last year or two of our lives, and I felt as a mom that they were really emotional events, you know, big changes in our family and where we've lived and where we've moved. And as a mom, I felt like sometimes I struggled to know how they were doing. And they were so young, especially at the time, they don't know how to communicate their emotions. They don't know how to.
Are you able to be a little bit clearer about what was going on?
Yeah, well, I've been divorced and I've moved. And so, like, their dad doesn't live with us anymore. They're living in a new place. So, I mean, they're doing great. I think they've done great through all these transitions. But there are times where I feel like I can sense that they're emotional about things. And as a mom, you want to be able to encourage them. But if you don't know what they're feeling, you don't know how to best encourage them. So I had heard about the movie. I thought maybe this will be a really good tool for us to go see, and maybe it'll help them communicate their emotions. So we went and all saw it together, went to a matinee, and it was great. It was even more, it was more than I thought it was going to be, as far as like the results that I felt like it had for our family. You know, by the end, we were all sitting in one chair. They were both on my lap, and all three of us were crying. And my daughter, especially the five-year-old, she was just sobbing for like 30 minutes after the, like, for so long after the movie. I stopped several times as we were walking out to our car, got down on my knees and hugged on her and just, you know, comforted her, because she was just, it really hit a nerve with her.
Were you able to talk about why or what was going through her mind after
that? Yeah, it was really cool. It kind of opened up the opportunity for some really, I thought, beneficial conversations for us to have. You know, like, first, I thought it was interesting that it was the first time I felt like I had seen her cry tears of empathy.
Like, so seeing other character.
Exactly. Go. Like, you know, because kids, they cry because something's wrong with themselves. Like, oh, I don't like what's going on. I hurt my toe. Or they cry selfishly as little kids. And it was the first time I had noticed her crying tears based on something she was seeing somebody else experience.
Do you think that's because it showed this other character's emotional world?
I think so. I think she, like, felt like, I have those emotions, too. Sometimes I feel sad or I feel like all these feelings, and she could relate. And so, like, she was, like, moved really profoundly watching this girl go through emotions that she herself has felt. So by the time we got to our car, she was like, okay, well, this is making me sad in my life, and this is making me sad. And it was really interesting to be able to hear her voice, her own emotions and experiences so well, just immediately after watching that movie.
That's really cool. Incredible. And your son, who is just a year younger, right? Mm-hmm. So a four-year-old, was there a difference in how your four-year-old boy responded and how your five-year-old girl responded?
Yeah, I feel like it was a lot more immediate for Joelle. I think it just kind of planted some ideas in my son's mind. And, like, you know, the immediate response was he got emotional during the movie as well, but I couldn't tell if he was emotional as much from the movie or also just because his sister and I were crying, and he was like, oh, well, if they're crying, I'm going to cry. I don't know.
But he wanted in on the action.
Right, maybe. But I will say that since then, we've, as a family, been talking about our emotions a little more. And just a week ago, Everett was getting tucked into bed, and he was like, Mommy, I'm sad about this and about that. He was kind of really sharing with me, Mommy, this hurts my feelings that this is this way. Or, you know, just talking about, you know, family situations. And I was so proud. And I said, that's really a big boy thing of you to be able to do, is to be able to tell Mommy what you're feeling. I'm really proud of you.
Oh, and that's cool.
I felt like it's helped give me the tools to kind of help them, you know, understand that their feelings are okay. It's okay to feel sad. It's okay to feel angry. And also help teach them how we deal with those emotions, hopefully in a healthy way. Like, that's my goal.
Call 816-235-2888 to tell us how you responded to the movie Inside Out. Has anything stuck with you? Do you have theories about the way the characters and emotions are portrayed? We want you to join the conversation at 816-235-2888. Nichelle, what were some of, is there a moment in the film that really stuck with you or seemed to have a profound impact on your kids?
Well, we all got emotional really towards the end when one of the main points is, you know, you need the other emotions to kind of help you get back to the whole point is they're trying to get back to Joy. They're trying to get Joy back to the command center. And I think that we sometimes try to suppress, you know, the feelings of sadness and some of those feelings that we see as negative. And they have this revelation or, you know, understanding that we need sadness sometimes.
But sadness knows the way back in this case.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I felt like as those revelations were being very nice, especially just got really emotional, like, yeah, and I don't know. It just kind of made us really cry a lot because it really does seem like it's okay to just let those emotions out sometimes instead of trying to hold them in.
Russ, Charles, is there a particular moment when the importance of sadness really surfaces for you when you have the, like, aha, sadness is the key?
When sadness comforts Bing Bong.
The imaginary character
who's been discarded. Exactly. And, you know, you think to yourself, at that moment, you realize the importance of empathy. And yes, if you don't have sadness, if you can't experience that yourself, you can never have empathy. And without empathy, it's hard to cope with life and to help your fellow human beings. And I think that's a revelatory moment in the film. And it's really kind of brilliant.
Yes. I like the scene where Joy has to go after sadness. Sadness realizes that she has done, she says, everything I do is bad. I'm just creating all these problems. And she's floating away on a cloud. And Joy's got to go after it because Joy has come to that realization. You have to have sadness. It will bring people together, especially if you're sad publicly.
We're headed to a break. You're listening to Central Standard's Screen Time series with a discussion all about Inside Out. You can chime in at 816-235-2888. We've got a mom, a scholar of mythology, and a movie critic in the studio to chat with you. I'm Gina Kaufman. More in just a minute on Central Standard. We're back. It's Central Standard's Screen Time series. One Friday a month, we explore a media phenomenon that seems to be on a lot of people's minds, like a movie or a TV show, but it's like having a club on the radio. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today we're talking about Pixar's animated kids movie Inside Out. Our guests are mythology scholar Charles Kovich, movie critic Russ Simmons, and area mom Nichelle Nickel. Do you guys think the emotions in Inside Out, like these characters, are essentially working in cooperation, or are they like taking turns and handing over the reins or wrestling for them as the case may be?
Well, they know they're supposed to work together, but they have a tough time doing this. Who's going to be on night duty and who's going to do this? Should I take over the controls? No, I'll do it. I love anger, who starts to explode into more of a rage. It's hard to get the emotions to work together. And that's a nice insight that I think we get from this film.
You know, there's a moment where disgust and fear, because joy and sadness have been kind of sucked away from headquarters when they're trying to scramble in a situation that's really tense. And the fear is that they can get lost outside of headquarters forever. But for a while they're trying to make their way back, the other characters, fear, anger, and disgust, are running the show, and they realize that they need these other characters who just aren't there. And they take turns trying to pretend to be Joy. Talk to me about that scene, the whole like, well, what if we can just, we're sad right now or we're angry, we're just going to pretend to be happy. How's that going to go?
Wow. Yeah. This goes back to the actors, I think, that are playing these parts. Amy Poehler, who plays Joy, really nails it because, you know, she's She's perky most of the time, but you see it tempered down when she reacts with the other characters. Phyllis Smith, who plays Sadness, this is an actress who is in her 60s and has only been acting for just a few years.
Yeah, she came on the scene in The Office, right?
Right. She was actually a casting director, and they went to her and said, would you like to play this part? And she's got that kind of low-key thing, and it's the interaction between those emotions, and you see them change. You see Sadness becoming a little happier, the tempering down of the ubiquitous joy that you can't handle that either. So you see them play off one another, and the levels kind of shift.
Nichelle, what do you think of the interplay between these emotions? I mean, their dynamics with each other. As far as like thinking about it in terms of being a parent who's trying to, I don't know, teach something to your children.
Well, it's funny to me because, I mean, it just shows so brilliantly how fickle emotions are, how quickly they change, especially in little kids. They can go from crying to laughing to all of the feels in just a matter of 60 seconds or less. So I thought the movie did an awesome job of just portraying how complex all of those characters are and how they interact with each other and how they, like you said, influence each other. And it was really good.
Charles, in Greek myths and in the literature of ancient Greece, when the gods get involved in some kind of drama, what is the outcome supposed to be? Is there supposed to be a winner, like the god of war gets his way and the god of love goes home? Or, I mean, is there an kind of ideal conclusion to the drama?
Often it doesn't work out the way the gods want because they can't control everything. And that's one thing I think this movie shows us. Sometimes things go awry with their spouses. Even Zeus and his wife Hera are constantly, Hera's this wonderful character, the kind of virago wife just going after her husband. Are you going out and having these affairs? Of course he does have affairs with mortal women.
Because he's in charge of the universe.
Yes, well, he supposedly is the most powerful, except when you get to things like the fates and other things, even he cannot stop the fate who cuts the thread of life. They get involved in all sorts of things that actually seem rather silly sometimes. They get themselves caught in golden nets when they're having an affair. They do all of these things that they wish did not happen to them, but they do because it's impossible to be in total control all of the time. And that's what so much of Greek drama shows us. It shows us that sometimes these things come up in us. Why do people go into a rage and this kind of anger and madness? Why do people feel betrayed? Look at the story of Clytemnestra and her husband Agamemnon.
Tell us that story, if you can, quickly. Okay. I mean, I think it's a trilogy.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but from Aeschylus, although it's part of the Greek. They built their drama mostly on Greek myths, and so I wanted to illustrate those dramatically. Well, of course, Agamemnon has gone off to the Trojan War.
And he's a king, right?
He's the king, and he has sacrificed his daughter to get the winds. And, of course, his wife, Clytemnestra, does not like that. In the meantime, the war lasts 10 years. Be careful when you go away and leave your marriage for 10 years, because she has taken a lover, Aegisthus. And when Agamemnon comes back and having the nerve to have his new concubine trailing after him, she prepares the royal bath for him. As he gets into it, she has an axe under the bathtub.
Whoa.
And just chops him to death to let him know what she thinks of it. Why? And that's the Greeks say, why do people do these things? Why do they let their emotions go in such an extreme way? And it continues, should the son punish the mother for killing the father? Because you're not supposed to kill your own parents, your own bloodline in Greek drama. That's part of the whole thing. How can we resolve this? And that's what the whole drama, the trilogy by Aeschylus, tries to tell us. How can these things be resolved in some reasonable way? What part does reason have in this? What can we do?
Is that pretty much the goal in Inside Out? I mean, that we're trying to resolve this in a reasonable way, this sort of seemingly no-win situation?
Yeah, no question about it. As a matter of fact, I don't want to give anything away, but it does a really good job of just showing how essential all of the emotions are. You know, you can't just depend on one or two to carry you through. They're all play against one another to help.
Let's talk to some of our callers about how they responded to the movie. Let's hear from Brian and Lee Summit. Hi, Brian.
Hi. I thought this movie was brilliant. I've seen it twice. I've got two daughters. One's grown, one's still in high school. I have a fiance she and I both suffer from bipolar disorder, also from PTSD. And I just think it's great to have a movie like this that illustrates the complex internal landscape of emotions. My daughters, all of us would spend a fortune on therapy if we actually got enough to help us. We're kind of in that segment of society that it's kind of a luxury to go in and get all the therapy you need.
Well, was there a moment in the movie that gave you, I don't know, that was like a revelation for you or an epiphany of some kind?
I think that there were so many of those, it would be hard to pinpoint one.
Can you pick just one?
But the way they illustrated the islands, like, was it Riley, the character? She had Hockey Island and Family Island, and they were, threatened by certain things. When she ran away, it compromised the trust she had with her family, so Family Island started to crumble. And I think it's great when these complex concepts can be illustrated in a way, especially for visual people. I'm an artist. One of my daughters is an artist. We're all pretty creative types. And we all have diagnoses. So, I've seen this movie twice. I took my fiance to it once. I took my oldest daughter to it once. And I feel like we could just watch it every week and get something from it to help us deal, and to help us communicate.
Well, and maybe just like the physical setting being almost like a map, but we haven't talked that much about those islands of personality where the early memories that this main character Riley has kind of form some basic islands that are components of who she is that make her unique. And she's got, I think Family Island is an important one. Friendship Island is another. She's got Goofball Island, which I think the character Joy seems especially fond of. And as difficult things happen, one problem, I mostly liked the movie, but one problem I did have with it is that problems arose and these islands just came tumbling down. They weren't like, it wasn't a little crack in the island. It wasn't a little tremor. It was just the island is there and then it's gone. I mean, that's intense as an emotional metaphor, but maybe subtlety doesn't work in movies. I don't know.
Well, I don't want to give too much away, but I think the thing that it does demonstrate is that those islands can be rebuilt.
Right.
So you have hope. When mm-hmm. those things do start to crumble, they can be repaired.
And maybe they're trying to tell us that these parts of your personality are really fragile. You have to take some care with them. The Greeks even had a goddess of friendship, Philia, to illustrate friendship, how important that was as a basic human emotion, they actually thought, as we see in the movie, too. And I saw that, too. And it's sort of frightening because they show it cracking, as you say, but then mm-hmm. the whole thing collapses down into the bottomless pit. And you wonder, because these are supposed to be essential parts of Riley's personality, will she ever get her personality back? And, of course, the rebuilding is the wonderful part of that movie then, too.
Yeah. Well, can you tell us just a little bit about that character of friendship in the Greek myths? I'm curious about that.
Well, Philia, we get a lot of things. There are different types of love. It's actually part of love. There's eros, which is more erotic love. But Philia is more of a platonic friendship, the kind you see in the movie, which you would have with your friends. And in the movie, too, I'm glad they illustrated this. When Riley feels betrayed by a friend, when she goes on her laptop and looks back, talks to a friend in Minnesota, where she came from before the move, and there's a new friend. Her best friend has a new friend that she plays ice hockey with, as Riley used to play ice hockey with his friend, and she immediately feels betrayed, and Philia is mm-hmm. just caught. That friendship goes crashing down, and again, the fragility of that is really amazing.
Let's talk to Patricia in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Patricia.
Hello.
Hello
to everybody.
Yeah, join the conversation.
Thank you. I'm curious about the concept of joy, because it seems like joy is always part of a dichotomy, that it's linked with sorrow or anger. And in Greek mythology, how does that play out? Is there ever a completely happy part of joy? I was thinking about the Bacchae when, the revelers, then they kill the king.
Right.
I wanted to ask Dr. Kovich.
Yeah. There is a Greek God of Joy, euphrosyne. The you is that giveaway. It's like eulogy, a happy talk about euphrosyne, joy. Greek drama depends on whether you're talking about Greek tragedy or comedy, but if it's tragedy, the word itself tells you what's going to happen by the end. It's not going to be happy. There's a kind of, at the end of many of these tragedies, including the Bacchae, a kind of satisfaction or equilibrium, knowing what's happening and what's going to happen. That these bad, it's a little like the movie itself. These bad things do happen, and come to terms with them. Dionysus appears at the end of the Bacchae and sort of tells people, this is what life is like. My father Zeus has decreed these things, and get used to it. Try to make the best balance you can, because this is what your life is like. And I think we see that in the movie, too, to some degree. You have to try to put these things together. I think, by the way, one thing I liked about the movie, at the end, when the emotions come back together and they're in the control room, the technicians come in and build them a new control panel. And that, I thought, was really good to show that they had now taken control. The funny part that made me laugh out loud, there's a big red button and it says puberty. And they say, what's that?
What's
and they
puberty?
Say, oh, never mind. Never mind. It's not really important. And they just pass it by. That made me laugh out loud.
You know, as a mom, Nichelle, you've expressed a lot of happiness that your kids have picked up on a language to talk about sadness and acceptance around sadness. But hearing this idea of like joy not being able to ever like come on the scene just by herself as a character or by itself as an emotion, I mean, I don't know. We all want for ourselves moments of just complete joy that are not tempered by anything else. But you have to also especially want that for your little kids. Little kids. Is it hard for you to think about these ideas and to see your kids maturing into them in a way?
It's really hard to see them feeling a lot of emotions and not feel like they can communicate them, which is why I wanted to take them, because I felt like it gave them a vocabulary and kind of a visual aid to help them do that. And, you know, when my daughter was crying, we were in line at Chipotle going to get her, you know, some tacos, and she's still crying, and I'm holding her, and I'm just whispering her in her ear, and she was like saying, this makes me sad, or this makes me sad. And so we were able to acknowledge that, and I was able to kind of encourage her. But then the conversation really evolved to, well, what are things that make us happy too? And so by the time we left, it was like a cool conversation where she was able to voice negative and positive. And by the time we left, she was singing and fine.
Central Standard's headed to one last break. You still have a little time to get in on this screen time conversation about Inside Out. Call 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. We'll be right back. You're listening to Central Standard, and today's show is all about Inside Out. I'm Gina Kaufman, and we're talking with local mom Nichelle Nickel, mythology and literature expert Charles Kovich, and Central Standard's resident movie critic Russ Simmons. Hi again, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
You know, I want to talk about a moment that really I have thought about a lot since I saw the movie, which is at one point, Joy wants to take a shortcut back to headquarters, and she wants to go through imagination as the shortcut. Sadness warns her that she could get lost in imagination land forever. And I think that's so profound, just the idea of, I think of imagination as a good thing usually, but it does seem like, yeah, investing too much emotion in fantasies can take you actually totally off track and take you away from reality. I mean, maybe in some cases, even forever. Being scared of imagination is actually something that never occurred to me.
Yeah, it's the road to madness, or it could be. I've heard many people have said to me at one time or another, oh, you're living in a fantasy world. And so I think that we all have to be grounded in reality and pull ourselves back, because even though we may want to believe something, we have to make sure that it's real.
Is imagination presented as a danger in the mythological world?
Not specifically. The Greeks loved imagination. They loved them. They kind of created Western literature for us. But they saw that it could let us experience things vicariously. They saw it, I think, basically as a good. You don't have to kill a king or go into these rages and kill your husband. But you can see that, and see that as a part of yourself. But as Russ said, you know,
so you
can't
see
be
it
in
your
fantasy.
Imagination instead
right.
of doing it
exactly.
in real life.
That's the image you get of this. And that you can deal with it much more easily that way. As Russ said, you have to be grounded in something so you're not lost in fantasy.
Let's talk to Justin in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Justin.
Hi, Gina.
What's your story?
Well, it's interesting that you brought up imagination. You asked earlier what the main point of the movie was that really stuck with us. And I don't know why, but when Bing Bong and Joy and Sadness were coming through Imagination Land, and he said, "That's weird. I used to remember this was right here, and everything's starting to change. You can see this being dismantled." I don't know why, but that scene and then Bing Bong vanishing into the dump, I don't know why, but that really, really tore me up. I was wondering if anybody else really had that same kind of visceral connection to that loss of imagination and creativity.
And it seems like being treated in some ways as a rite of passage. Yeah. So we've given a big spoiler alert for the whole show, and it seems like this is a place where, yeah, we're in it, guys. Sorry about that. But we'll talk about this moment in the story. I mean, first of all, are we on a heroic journey as we're traveling through Riley's subconscious? I mean, would you characterize what Sadness and Joy are on as, like, a heroic journey?
Yes, well, this is the journey motif in literature. That's really the basis of the story. People who go on a quest to get something or get back what they've lost. And that's what gives the story its impetus and motive force. And there is a sad scene, as I said, with Bing Bong when he realizes himself that he's got to jump off the cart. Sorry, spoiler alert. so that she can get back up to the plateau and get back into the control room.
What is a character like that? I mean, is that a type of character who you meet on a journey who performs some crucial role?
Yes, it's a character from your past or exemplifies your past. It's something you have to leave behind. Mm-hmm. And heroes on the journey quest know that they do that. Some of their past they have to leave behind so they can grow into something new. And Bing Bong has almost been forgotten at the start of the movie. He reemerges, and it's really interesting that he himself realizes, I've got to jump off the cart. I'm something that has to be left behind, and only that way will Joy get back to the control room.
We're hearing from an adult who is just profoundly saddened by this moment in Inside Out, a children's movie. Russ, is this a moment that has sort of reverberations throughout cinema?
Oh, sure. You know, personally, I completely relate to what that guy said because I felt sadness at the loss of Bing Bong as well. But, you know, there's only so much of a load that you can carry. And in order to be a healthy person, then, you know, sometimes you just have to let these things go.
Let's talk with Heather in Kansas City. Hi, Heather.
Hi. I, of course, did not know what the previous caller was going to talk about when I called in, but I actually was an audible, like, joyful reaction when this Bing Bong made its appearance because, and we were at the drive-in, which was hilarious because I have all these teenage kids with me, and I'm like, yay, like something beautiful and joyful that you hope every child has is something that gave them comfort that at some point they kind of grew out of. But I also, when I think about the film, I think the beauty that Joy and Sadness were completely connected in rediscovering Bing Bong and then relying upon whatever because of course comfort, the item of comfort, whether it's your binky or your blankie or your stuffed animal, there's something about kind of a sadness, not so much fear, because fear, I associate fear sometimes with like terror, but like kind of, you know, like your mom leaves, so, you know, goes off to work and you need your blankie to make you feel better, that sadness. And that Joy, when they come and they have this journey with Bing Bong, like they just said, you know, at some point you kind of have to launch past that. But I loved it. It was so delightful that they thought to include that element of childhood and that it was an important part of kind of giving her renewed strength and moving her on in her journey. It was lovely. I was so excited.
Thank you so much, Heather. I think we are getting Bing Bong. Let's let's talk a little bit about these other characters and how they look, because I think that kind of came up for me in Heather's description of how fear is treated in this movie. Fear is practically shaped like a question mark. I mean, and fear is always... Fear isn't creating like hypothetical situations that are scary. Fear is just asking questions. Fear jumps on the controls and says, what's going on? What just happened? What's going to happen to us? Is this really, I mean, Nichelle, you are very close with your parenting small children. Does fear come in the form of question marks for them?
Yeah, I mean, my kids are always wanting to know what's next. What are we doing after lunch? What are we doing? Like, there's a sense of security in knowing those things, you know, and when they're young, that's why they ask. That's one reason, you know, besides their obvious curiosity. There's a comfort in knowing what the answer is. And I think it's interesting how all these characters, even the emotions that sometimes we see as negative emotions, their whole motive is to protect Riley, you know, like they get angry or disgusted or afraid because they're trying to help her navigate and stay safe. And that's kind of what I thought is really cool is like we have these fear, you know, emotions, but the motivation is for her to feel safe. And
yeah. What about the portrayal of sadness? We touched on this a little bit earlier, but I might be taking this a little personally, but sadness has like glasses and like darker hair than the other characters. And I don't know. And the genders assigned to the different emotions are kind of interesting. I mean, they are all a tiny bit androgynous, but you can, at the end of the day, you can tell which of these characters are being assigned as female and which are male. And yeah, we've got the female joy, sadness, and disgust, and the male anger and fear. What do we think about these things?
Well, the one thing is anger is generally thought of as the okay emotion for men to portray, you know, because, hey, I can do that. I can't cry. That's not manly, but I can certainly be mad. That is manly. And so I think it's a smart move on their part to portray anger as a man. Because
just to let kids feel okay about it?
No, just because I think that at least in our own minds, that it is a masculine emotion, you know.
But do you think that could reinforce some ideas? If we're all supposed to have all of these.
What's interesting is, you know, there are short moments in the film where we see into the minds of the parents as well. And they are versions of these same characters, just slightly different. But the anger is always male.
What about the genders? Do the genders of Greek gods have anything to teach us about the history of this, of assigning characters to our universal emotions?
Athena, the goddess of wisdom, but also the war goddess, is a goddess, is female. I thought the movie was interesting as a kind of counterpoint to make the chief character, Riley, a girl, 11-year-old girl, not a boy. So that was good, too. I also thought that you know, what goes on inside of you maybe is a mix of male and female, they're saying. I like the movie, too, because it shows us not something about ourselves, but also something about other people that maybe we should understand and respect them, too. On my office door, I have a little saying from Philo of Alexandria, the classical scholar. It says, "Be kind. Everyone you meet is fighting a great battle you know nothing about." Mm-hmm. And I was hoping maybe this movie was making us understand that about other people, that these emotions are going on inside of them. And maybe it's hard to control in other people, as in ourselves.
Yeah, when I was talking about all those emotions, talking about how they, you know, their motivation is to protect us. And like you say, I feel like that's exactly it, too, is it helps us recognize that when other people are, you know, showing emotions that we find off-putting, to just, you know, realize that those emotions are probably there because they feel like a sense of needing to protect themselves or, you know,
I want to get
that compassion.
We've got a caller who I want to get in very quickly. Marilyn, we don't have much time at all, but you wanted to chime in on a similar thing.
That's exactly what I took away from the movie. And you guys had just touched on it, that at the very end, and again, spoiler alert, but we get to see into the minds of other characters and other people that Riley interacts with. And we get to see what their emotions are and who's in charge that day. And I think it gives us, as people, you know, the insight into thinking about, well, what demons are you battling today? And maybe how could I help you get back home?
Marilyn, is that something, I mean, has that had resonance for you since you saw the movie? Have you entered into situations differently?
Oh, I wouldn't say so. It's only been like a week. But, I mean, you got to give me a chance here. It is something I think about, and I think that it's something I try to think about anyway, but that this movie put it into a visual form I thought was really nice. and that you can see that some people just have more of one emotion than another. I don't want to give too much away either, but that they are battling different emotions, and people have always told me I'm permanently perky. I'm the joy.
She's the joy character. Well, we're going to go out on Bjork's human behavior. Seems an appropriate one, but that's it for today's show. We just spent the morning talking about Pixar's Inside Out. If you want to continue the discussion, you can do that on our Twitter feed. We're at KCURCST. Nichelle Nickel, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. It was fun.
And Charles Kovich, with us from Rockhurst University's English department. It's been so fun getting to know you.
Yes, thank you. It's just wonderful.
Russ Simmons, as always, a pleasure.
My pleasure.
You can listen back to this show later today at kcur.org/centralstandard. Sign up for our podcast while you're there and never miss an episode. Screen Time will be back in September. Monday, the increasing problem of student debt from two very different perspectives. That's Monday. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross, with Fridays by Jen Chen. We get lots of help from Andrea Tudhope. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day. Our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. I'm Gina Kaufman. Have a great weekend.